Well, Happy New Year. Hope you had a wonderful break, if that indeed is what occurred between that the end of the year and where we are right now. But it's kind of back to the regular grind for so many of us here, with so many things happening, especially in the area around Florida's capital city. Gosh, we are just a few days away from the start of committee week at the Florida Capitol, and we have inauguration of a new governor and cabinet members and all kinds of fun things. And then it's into the legislative session, and it's just unrelenting fun. But anyway, hope you had a good time during the break. And we are back now on Perspectives on WFSU. And thanks so much for joining us. I'm Tom, and we are going to talk about something that has kind of become a tradition for us over the past several years. And the issue is human trafficking. And that name, when you think about it, always seems to conjure up what we see dramatized on TV or in the movies. These, you know, swarthy-looking folks swooping in and grabbing children and spiriting them away to terrible, terrible things. But it doesn't really seem to happen in our backyards. You know, this is something that takes place in Central or South Florida or someplace else, but never here. But the reality is actually a lot closer to home. Now, the Florida Department of Children and Families has estimated the number of human trafficking cases in Florida has been on a steady and tragically upward trajectory now for more than a decade. And the official numbers for 2018, they are nowhere near to be released yet by either DCF or the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. But state officials did report about a year ago the number of human trafficking cases up more than 50% from the previous year. And this has been pretty much a steady thing since 2007. It has most recently reached a total of nearly 2,000 reported cases. And again, how many of those cases are not reported in addition to what I just mentioned? That is unknown, but we're going to try to talk a little bit about that today. And to discuss the situation with us, let's go around the table and say hi to some great folks. First, hey, Susan Turner, co-owner of Food Glorious Food, Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center board member, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
It is good to see you. We have Vanya Yavera, Assistant Director of FSU Center for the Advancement of Human Rights, also a member of the Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center Board, BBC AHT Co-Chair, we'll ask you some more about that, and Social Services Committee. Vanya, good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
And what does BBC AHT stand for?
Big Ben Coalition Against Human Trafficking.
Very good. It is a wonderful thing to have you here. Jeff Lupkin, Senior Vice President, Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, joins us here as well. Hey, Jeff.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
It is wonderful to be here with you, too. And kind of driving this bus, if you will, Robin Hassler-Thompson, Executive Director of the Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center, who helped put all this together. And Robin, let's get an update from you here. Where do we stand? We talked about some initial numbers, which are still a little bit spongy and indeterminate at this point. But from where you sit on the Advocacy Center, how bad is human trafficking in Florida right now?
Well, clearly, Florida still is number three in the nation when it comes to the cases of human trafficking that are reported to our hotline. And so we know that, you know, we're still up there, unfortunately. There are so many places in Florida that are right here in our area that are attracting trafficking. And one of the things that maybe we can talk about later, too, is how post-disasters, how post-Hurricane Michael, we're undoubtedly seeing increases in human trafficking, both in labor and sex trafficking. So there's no question that we're still there in our area. We've seen an increase of cases being reported, both of children who are sex trafficked, adults who are sex and labor trafficked as well. So we've still got a lot to do on that how bad is it question, but also say how good is it? How good it is that we have ever-growing awareness, ever-growing education, ever-growing involvement from our public and private partners, from law enforcement, and we've also got a lot of good news to share.
Okay, because I can recall when, particularly in some aspects of law enforcement, not all agencies certainly, But this was a very, very difficult crime to detect, to make arrests, to move forward with prosecutions. And a lot of agencies just, look, don't even bother us with this. It's too difficult. How do you even put together a case on this stuff? Because they're here today, gone tomorrow.
Exactly. Now, part of the good news is I have to share this, is Sheriff Walt McNeil over the last year opened his office and his staff wide to this issue. What he did is he asked STAC to come in and help coordinate a training for every single road patrol. So we were there at 5 a.m. and Terry Coonan from the Human Rights Center and I did training of all the road patrols in Leon County Sheriff's Office. We did another training for all investigators, another training for all school resource deputies, another training for, Vanya did this, for all new deputies. And that means every single person at LCSO was trained. Oh, that includes, by the way, they developed a standard operating policy. So an SOP that now can be shared with all of the various law enforcement agencies in our area. Also, as part of that, Chris Canova, who's our U.S. attorney who heads up BBCAT, as we call it, our Big Bend Coalition Against Human Trafficking, sent out a letter to every single law enforcement agency that said, look, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement online has a training, a two-hour training that is excellent. And there's no reason why during this month of January in particular, why every single sworn law enforcement officer cannot take that two-hour training and have the basics to understand how to recognize this. So that's been great, and it really sort of shows how partnerships between the advocacy community and law enforcement, which are vital to helping victims, can get formed at really the very beginning.
Well, gosh, Vanya, since you were involved in putting together that program and interfacing with law enforcement and stuff, one of the questions that I hear a lot is, where did these people come from? Are these, you know, undocumented immigrants? Are there folks right here in our own hometown who are being recruited into these networks? Where do the victims come from?
It's really both. There isn't really a single profile for victims. We have U.S. citizens, we have foreign nationals, we have men, women, children. Really, the only commonality that we see is that there is some vulnerability that can be exploited in someone. As Robin said, any time after a disaster, if someone is homeless, for example, anyone that is looking for a better life and is promised a job somewhere, any vulnerability, really. We have seen people with disabilities who have been taken advantage of as well. People that have received SSI, for example. We have seen traffickers who take advantage of anyone that has someone that they can exploit.
And this is not something that people typically voluntarily enter into. Come with me. You will live in virtual slavery. You will be abused. Terrible things will befall you. You'll be filled with shame and despair. Come with me. It'll be a great time. This doesn't happen that way.
Absolutely not. We have seen so many cases for foreign nationals, for example, that are looking for a better way of life. We have seen cases. We had a case in the San Destin area in which an agency, a temp agency, was recruiting mainly students from Europe, southeastern Europe. And they were coming here under a temporary basis, thinking that they were going to spend a summer working in different places in the hospitality industry, learning more about that area. When they got here, they discovered that that was not the reality. This particular temporary agency was hiring them, was bringing them to the Sandestine area, working at the Sandestine Hilton and many other resorts area in the Panhandle. And they were working very long hours. They were housed many to a room, anywhere between 15 to 20 to a condominium. And they were being paid like $1 an hour. They had their plane ticket to go back. However, if they went back earlier than they had estimated to go back, they would have paid really high fees. And so they decided to go back. And that's why it took so long to discover this kind of case, because they would do it on a temporary basis and would bring temporary workers. And they would decide to go back instead of staying here to do a full investigation and prosecution of cases. They would decide just to go back, and they would hire a new team of student workers to come. And so this happens more often than not.
Okay, and the perfect segue here to Jeff Lipkaman. On one hand, you could say, oh, well, the hospitality industry just benefits from this because it's instant cheap labor and it's almost like indentured servitude. But what is the industry doing to try to change that, not only perception, but that reality, Jeff?
Yeah, the key word is awareness. Words we've heard since we were kids: if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is not true. It's incumbent upon our industry to understand where our labor pool is coming from, especially if, for instance, a hotel property is using a contract labor supply, whether it be for landscaping, housekeeping, other departments that they're staffing. It's incumbent upon that business to understand where those people are coming from and to do some due diligence. To analogize this to food safety, which we work in significantly, we now have every major household name, whether it's in retail, ready-to-eat, or grocery, they go offshore to ensure that the food they're importing is produced safely all the way from where it comes from to where it's placed. And we can apply that same level of scrutiny and awareness to our labor and staffing. The bad guys are taking advantage of the fact that we're at historically low employment numbers. Our industry has been understaffed for decades under the best of circumstances and will continue to be so for a long time to come. So that creates a ripe environment for the bad guys to supply labor that we desperately need and take advantage of these people. To touch on something you said earlier, it frequently does start voluntarily, but then a bait and switch occurs when that foreign national arrives on a legal visa, enters the country legally, enters so voluntarily, and then the game is changed on them. Their travel documents are confiscated by their management, etc. And I guess we'll come back to more of that in a minute.
We will indeed. Thank you so much. Very perceptive, Jeff. Appreciate that. Human trafficking is what we're talking about here on Perspectives, our first program of the brand new year, 2019. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, 850-414-1234 is the phone number. You can send us an email to perspectives@wfsu.org, and we'll be right back. We are back on Perspectives, Human Trafficking, and the surprisingly pervasive reason that we are talking about it right now, that it is on the increase. And Jeff Lipkaman, as you said, we now are in a situation where we have a crisis when it comes to employment. I mean, it's a good crisis on one hand that we're down around that 3% unemployment rate, but that also means that a lot of organizations, a lot of companies are on the lookout for help, and they may not be as diligent as otherwise they might when they're vetting new employees that they so desperately need, and they may be caught up in human trafficking without even being aware of it.
That's true. As I said, it's incumbent upon our industry to have some awareness. So awareness is critical, and asking questions. If it sounds too good to be true, as I started to say, it's incumbent that we ask questions, find out where these people are coming from, and really know who we're dealing with. For this reason, the Florida Restaurant Lodging Association has made a training program available to the industry and anyone that's interested. You can get to it very easily by Googling FRLA, human trafficking, And hopefully the first search return will be a link that gets the participant there. It's about a 30 to 35 minute self-directed online course that we're making available absolutely free of charge. It is self-paced. You can jump in, jump out, but it's targeted and specifically designed for hourly employees and managers in both food operations and lodging operations to raise awareness.
Well, that's going to be helpful because I'm thinking, Susan Turner, you have now, Food Glorious Food is not what you could call an international chain at this point.
Not quite.
But for some of the, for smaller hotel, motel properties, for smaller restaurants and all, you don't have like a big HR department with the capability of going on and running an entire screening process on the new employee who comes and says, hey, I can help with prep work, I can do this, I can do that, and you just got to get someone there to crank out the meals and serve customers. So this, what Jeff was talking about there, that sounds like that'd be a useful resource to have.
It will be wonderful, and I will definitely tell our staff to go on. But in my 36 years of having the restaurant, I really have not seen any evidence of human trafficking in my place. Now, that's not to say it's not everywhere else, but I wanted to say that when this was going on in Sandestin, we were not at the Hilton, but there were other restaurants, and there was a huge group of Eastern European girls who were waitresses, and there was definitely evidence there of being human trafficked.
So, do you just call the cops then and say, hey, we got a problem? Or how do you approach that if you are a business and you have suspicions?
I think you do. I think you have to. And law enforcement, as Robin has said, has really become aware of it.
Yeah, we do need to do more of that see something, say something thing. One of the important resources we have in our country is a national human trafficking hotline. It's 888-37-37-888. And one of the things you could do if you kind of just suspected it is you could always just call that hotline and say, hey, I think something's up here. Rarely do we see, as we go around our daily lives, something that will say 100%, I know this is trafficking. We might suspect it. So you could call the hotline. Certainly if there was something, any kind of really big emergency or something where you had some fear, definitely call law enforcement. Call 911. There's been a big push to have this training happen, and everything we can do as people in the community helps law enforcement to let them know. Sometimes law enforcement may not be ready to come to a situation if you just suspect it. So in your local area, for here, it's STAC. You could call our number, which is 850-597-2080, but calling that hotline number will get you to us as well, and we could talk about, let me see what we can do. Let's see what we can figure out. Let me call our colleagues in law enforcement and figure out what they might want to do. So taking action, I think, is the most important thing. And I need to add to one thing that Susan was saying, too, and what Jeff was saying on the issue of the staff in your restaurant, but also where the food comes from. And I know we're going to talk about that, but we want to make sure that the food we eat, the consumer goods we take advantage of, haven't been produced with slaves, essentially. So that's another part of our awareness campaign.
Well, that is a great transition into this. And let's talk about that, Vanya, if we could. How does the average person, we've covered the hospitality industry and other private sector enterprises that may play into this without even realizing it. But for just plain folks, how do we inadvertently, unknowingly support human trafficking? Because if we know that, we're not going to do it, right?
There are so many different ways. Definitely becoming educated. Like Robin said, like Susan said, where your food comes from, where everything that you use is produced. There are different ways of becoming involved. We have a very active coalition in the state of Florida. It's called the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. And they have been working in this industry for a very long time. They are formed of farm workers, and they have developed code of conduct. They work directly with the farmers. They work directly with the farms, but also the big corporations. They have been working with everyone for a very long time, 20 plus years. And what they have developed is called a Fair Food Program. The Fair Food Program encourages big corporations to buy from farms that really implement this code of conduct, meaning that there is a safe environment for the employees. Many times, especially for female farm workers, they do not only experience the labor exploitation, but they end up also experiencing sexual harassment, running the risk of being raped at job sites. Well, what the Fair Food Program really guarantees is that the farms that are part of this program are looking out for their employees. This program basically started with the tomato industry. Florida produces about 80% of tomatoes for the entire country. And so they started out with making sure that the farm workers were getting fair a fair paycheck, basically only increasing one cent per pound of tomatoes that each one of the farm workers picked. It also really expanded into looking more out for more of the safety issues of the workers. Now the program is expanding to so much more, not only to tomatoes, but other industries. As a matter of fact, other states that are involved in other industries are kind of implementing the same program. I know that in Vermont, they're looking at the industry of milk producing. So they're looking at that as well. And other states are implementing it with many of the other produce that they produce. I know that this program is growing, and the Fair Food Program has its own website. The public can actually go to their site, just Google the Fair Food Program, and they can look as to who is involved, what corporations are involved. The coalition has been very actively working on implementing more and more of the Fair Food Program all throughout the country. And I think that just becoming informed and knowing where everything comes from, it's important for the consumers, as well as knowing what's going on in your area, knowing where to report something that does not seem right, knowing what coalitions, what organizations are there, knowing that when cases are discovered, that the whole community is needed to help. Organizations like the Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center, assisting victims directly, working with victims on a daily basis, knowing the needs of the victims, contacting those kinds of organizations and finding out how can I help, because there are so many different ways to help.
For folks who are regularly purchasing their fresh produce from, say, a local farmer's market, you can actually talk to the farmer, the people who were involved in the production of that food. You have one degree, I guess, of reassurance right there. But for the major international producers that deal with, you know, your Publix and your Winn-Dixie's and all those kinds of things, are those companies getting on board now too? Are they integrating with that, Susan Turner, or what?
There are some that are. Whole Foods, Fresh Market, Trader Joe's, believe it or not, Walmart, Subway. It's slow, but they're getting there. And you can sort of feel the momentum gaining. The more and more exposure and knowledge people get when they walk down the produce aisle of a grocery store, knowing if that store supports that program, they can shop with a conscience. We have a program that we're sort of dealing with or trying to create. It's called Cooking with a Conscience. But you can't cook with a conscience unless you shop with one. So you have to know where your produce is coming from and who supports it and who does not. And the Coalition for Immokalee Workers has just done a great, great job. There's also civileats.com, which is another website that you can go to. There's some international companies that do not support this. Particularly in the cocoa business, Nestle's, Hershey's, Mars, believe it or not, Kit Kat. These use child labor to do their pick their cacao beans. So I don't know if you'll give up chocolate for that, but, you know, it's a reason to be, you know, more and more aware of who does and who does not.
Sure, because economic pressure is the most potent of any kind. What about in hotel, motel, and that type of thing, Jeff? You have like, hey, we got a certified something or other saying, insofar as we can determine, our property does not have anything to do with people who engage in human trafficking.
Yeah, the hospitality business, whether it be food or lodging, is a highly competitive business. And in this day and age, social responsibility can flow to the bottom line. It's great to do the right thing because it's the right thing, but it's also healthy for business. And I think of my son, who makes purchasing decisions based on social responsibility and social justice. And the more a business can demonstrate that they have wardired their entire supply chain, whether it be products, food, textiles in a hotel, and the labor that they use on a daily basis, the more that they can demonstrate that they procure those inputs on a socially responsible way and bang the drum, it's good for business and it's the right thing to do. So it's certainly an opportunity for businesses to get on board.
Yeah, because it may not totally mitigate the situation, but if you can eliminate more and more of the opportunities for the purveyors of human trafficking to get a return on that investment, it will certainly help to start drying it up. There won't be as many opportunities for those folks to make money.
You're exactly right. It's the problem is so deep and wide. But how do you eat an elephant? You know, one bite at a time. And every business has the opportunity to ask a lot of questions, make sure they know their suppliers, make sure they know where the labor's coming from, the food's coming from, and all of their supplies. And the more questions we ask, if one business at a time forecloses the opportunity for either slave-produced food or trafficked labor, if they do that one business at a time, then we will make a difference.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Susan.
I just wanted to say that I've started asking our food purveyors, you know, where do you source your food? And no one's ever asked them that before. And so it has to begin somewhere. And that's one thing the Coalition for Immokalee's Workers discovered was it was the supply chain that made the difference. It was not going to each little farm and finding people, but it was going to the supply chain that, you know, made the biggest impact.
And one of the things that we've done here locally that Susan has spearheaded is us talking to our local farmers and purveyors, our local restaurants. So from STAC's perspective, what we would like to do is reward those who are producing slavery-free, trafficking-free food. And one of the things we do every year is at the end of March this year, we'll be having a big culinary tasting event where all the foods will be slavery-free and trafficking-free. Susan spearheads the creation of these foods and the menu and what we do. And it's been so exciting to go to all the farmers markets and say, would you like to be part of this? Here's what's involved. And I've had farmers say to me, what? This is going on in our area? These are a lot of family farmers. And of course, you know, they know exactly every hand who touches every single bean that's picked and every, you know, everything that's harvested. So what we want to do is we want to give them kudos. We want to give them attention and direct consumers to them so that consumers will support our local economy, our local farmers, our local restaurateurs and purveyors as well. So that's something on the positive side that we also like to do.
Okay, Susan Turner, give us a plug here for the when, the where, the how, the which of all this, huh?
Well, it's March 23rd, March 28th at the Turnbull Center. And we go to the farms, Bumpy Roads, with their wonderful grits. We have Glendower Farms in Monticello that has Iberico pigs, and they bring us pigs, and we do pulled pork with that. Food Glory's food produces a lot of the dishes that come from produce and products that are given to us from these farmers. Last year, we had these gorgeous fresh lettuces that were given to us, and we made a chopped Caesar salad. And so,
that was Katie Hughes at Summit Hill Farm. I want to give her a plug because they were there. Yep.
Madison Social was part of it, Sodo. And what we'd like to do this year is increase the number of farms, the number of farmers, and the number of restaurants who are willing to source the food and make it and donate it to the cause. And it's a wonderful event. People come. We set up stations, and people can just graze from one to the other and check out all the local produce and products.
So it's kind of like a chef sampler, but by the same token, it's also an economic development tool because you are locally sourcing that food. You are reinforcing that farm-to-table pipeline locally, all those kinds of things, which is a good thing.
And raising the consciousness of, you know, the people that come and see it and taste it.
Okay, one thing we want to talk about, and we're not pulling too many punches here today as we continue our discussion of human trafficking on our first perspectives of the brand new year. By the way, if you want to weigh in, please do. 850-414-1234 is the number. You can also email us, perspectives@wfsu.org. But we talked about the hospitality, the food service industry, some of these other enterprises that are out there, but we also want to find out what are other potential recipients of the ill-gotten gains of human trafficking, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment here on Perspectives. A reminder, you can always find the program online at WFSU.org. Just go to that aforementioned URL, click on Radio, pull down Programs menu, and click Perspectives, because we archive past shows. We try to have the latest one up there and available for you to go back to listen to within at least 24 hours of when the program actually airs on the radio, so hope you can do that as well. Human trafficking, our topic. We'll be right back and talk about it more right here on Perspectives. Back on the Human Trafficking Watch here on Perspectives with Susan Turner, Vanya Yovera, Jeff Lipkman, and Robin Hassler-Thompson here with us. And Vanya, to you here. We were talking before the break about food service, hospitality industry, that is thought of in many respects as being seething hotbeds of human trafficking. But there are other things that people might not even be aware of, right?
There's a lot going on, and this is why it's great to have programs like this. It's great to continue to educate ourselves on what's going on. We have cases of human trafficking popping up in so many different other places. We've heard of children that are being recruited by these organizations, claiming to be nonprofit, working for a good cause many times. Or even trying to raise funds for education, future education for children. What many parents don't realize is that over their summer, they're thinking their children are volunteering with these really good organizations for good causes, not realizing that they're not real organizations that are taking kids and taking them to different neighborhoods, dropping them off, and they're going from door to door, promoting different things, selling different things, totally unsupervised, without any food or water for very long hours. And we don't necessarily suspect what is really happening. And it is, we have had cases in the state of Florida already, cases exactly like this.
So what do you do? A little kid perhaps, you know, weary, thirsty, hungry, comes to your door and says, oh, please, will you help us? And your heart goes out to the little kid. But you say, okay, let me go online and vet you, and then we'll see if we can do business. How do you deal with that?
Well, that's really a difficult situation, right? And that is exactly why reporting it, finding ways to report it to law enforcement, becoming informed as to what resources we have in our community exactly for when situations like this come up. I think that all of us, not just organizations, not just state agencies, but everyone really can play a part in fighting this kind of crime. And awareness is one of them. The Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center is offering trainings every third Friday of every month at the Kearney Center, a two-hour training, which will provide a certificate. And there people can find out more as to what's going on locally. And hopefully this is a program that will continue and that the community will support.
And it just gives you that added degree of expertise and awareness to, uh-oh, something here does not look right.
Absolutely. Human trafficking has been a crime that has been going on forever. It's never gone away. It's modern-day slavery, practically. But now that we are getting more people informed, and once you start looking at what to identify, what to look out for, you start asking more questions.
Jeff, let me just tap into you here. Anything else you need to be on the lookout for, you know, beyond your area of concentration here when it comes to hotel, motel, restaurant, that sort of thing?
Yeah, one thing I would piggyback on to the awareness and training aspect, which is a formal undertaking. In daily operations, all businesses have the opportunity to come across trafficking. Our industry tends to be a little more susceptible. But having a plan on what to do, the awareness is great, the training is great, but that's the beginning. That's not the end. And managerial awareness, in the industry we call it active managerial awareness, which is actively knowing what's going on in the business and knowing what to do when you do have the opportunity to see something and say something. I want to piggyback on something Robin said earlier. The National Human Trafficking Hotline, there's no penalty for a false alarm. So erring on the cautious side is a good thing. But for our businesses, we coach them to be sure they have a plan and a policy so that if a housekeeper does see something, what do they do with that information? Are they empowered to act? Typically, no. They go to a manager on duty. That manager knows what to do. Is it a situation where it's a law enforcement issue right now? Call 911. Or is it a situation where they're not sure? Call the hotline. So no penalty for a false alarm. Acting on that information and raising awareness in the business is what we're trying to do.
Okay, Susan, from your angle there, what do you think?
Well, I think the awareness is the important thing, and training people that are in charge. And absolutely, if you know, just if you see it, you report it. And I think it's terribly important. And because it's such a problem in the hospitality business, you know, I think you have to jump on it and be a part of it.
Okay, and Robin Hassler-Thompson, anything else that we should be on the lookout for without the type of extensive training that we have already referenced today?
Yeah, sure. I mean, one of the things is to understand, too, when you see labor trafficking, you're probably also going to have sex trafficking somewhere lurking there. Both we've seen there was a recent study that came out of Arizona where youth that had been kind of come of age as adults were asked, these were trafficked youth. When you were under 18, what was your experience? What happened to you in terms of trafficking? A very large number of them had been both labor trafficked and sex trafficked. So it's understanding that, you know, we've had in Leon County, I know from the beginning of January through August, I think there were 19 cases of child sex trafficking. Children who were sex trafficked were reported to TPD. And we know it's more than that. So the question is, what else was going on with those kids? What else is going on with adults who are also labor and sex trafficked, especially women? They're double victimizations and children. And it's also understanding that in our community, whether you're working at the Kearney Center and working with homeless people, or whether you're working with people who are disabled, or any area where there's economic insecurity, it's likely a breeding ground for potential trafficking. So one of the things that I was reflecting on the other day is post-Hurricane Michael, west of here, you see huge vulnerabilities of people who have lost their homes, their livelihoods, everything. And we know from everything from tsunamis across the world to what's gone on in Houston the last time, that traffickers swoop in. They swoop in, they hire workers and exploit them. They swoop in and they kidnap children. And there's an increase in sex trafficking and labor trafficking post-disaster. So one of the things that I'm hopeful is that FEMA and everybody working in Mexico Beach and every place west of here and north of here, that we've got some awareness about trafficking and exploitation of labor, as well as the sex trafficking very likely happening.
And what happens to the victims? Because in many instances, these aren't hometown folks. They have been brought in from hundreds, perhaps thousands of miles away to a totally alien environment to them. Their oppressors are dutifully arrested. What happens to them? Do they just get stuck there? Do they get returned home? What happens?
It kind of depends.
It's really about asking, communicating with the victims, finding out specifically what their needs are, what is it that they want, what their goals are. As advocates, we want to make sure that we're not re-victimizing them. We're not imposing what we think they need, but looking out and asking for their opinion. So I will give you an example. At the Center for the Advancement of Human Rights, we have worked very, very closely. And just as emphasized was what Robin said as a post-disaster, the very big case that was identified and started here in the Tallahassee area, it was one of the first cases that was talked about in our capital city. It happened right after Katrina. The Colombian ring, the traffickers decided that they would do mobile brothels, and they would cater to a very specific group, and they were looking at workers in different areas. And so they would move the women around. With that particular case, after the victims received the immediate help that they needed, we worked with them not for a few days, not for a few weeks, not for a few months, but for years, finding out, okay, what exactly do we need? What exactly do you need, so that we can try to find the resources and accomplish your goals? With the particular survivors that we work with, it took a few years for them to decide, okay, this is what I want to do, whether it is going through a schooling program, whether it is going through assistance through my immigration paperwork. When victims of human trafficking are foreign, they have the option of, if working with law enforcement, they have the option to receive immigration relief. There is what is called a T visa. A T visa is granted for 4 years, and they can stay in the country, receive a work permit, receive a social security card, and work. Go to school if they want to, become reunited with some of their family members, qualifying family members. In the cases that we worked with at the center, for that particular case in 2007, there were women who had children, And we worked with different organizations because what they wanted is to see their children, to be reunited. And that is exactly what we explored with many different organizations, to bring their children here, to have their children enrolled in school, and for them to continue to work. That is exactly why they came to the country. I am very happy to say that they have accomplished that. And one of our clients has even purchased her own home. She's never had a home before. And to see that is very rewarding.
Given, however, the current uncertainties and in some quarters demonization of folks from other countries, though, does it make this rougher, Robin?
It can, of course. Again, the harder it is for anyone, the more vulnerable they are. And the more vulnerable they are, the more easy prey they are for traffickers. So the answer is yes, and that's why that we work hard. The center works hard as well to make sure that we do have the services that go to these survivors. And I think it's important to also mention that these survivors have suffered extreme trauma, much like being tortured. And so when Vanya talks about how long it takes, it's because they have suffered so much, and having the ability to process that, to get work, to get to school, to even talk to anybody about what happened, that's a huge issue. And so that's why we like to do a lot of training as we can to the mental health community and others, so that and it's not an if, but when they see a survivor of trafficking, whether it was 5 years ago or 5 days ago, that they'll know what to do to help that person deal with a deep trauma that they have suffered. So that's another thing, in addition to, you know, Vanya and the Human Rights Center providing excellent legal services. We have our legal services of North Florida also working. We've done training at the Appalachian Center. We've just done training recently at Tallahassee Memorial, so that emergency room nurses will be able to identify survivors, so that it goes hand in hand. So if they can recognize that someone has been trafficked or they've suffered any kind of trauma, they know how to respond. And then the vision for our agency is that we network with every other agency that we can in town, every other law enforcement, every other public-private sector, because we know each victim is going to have different needs. And how do we get that person the housing and the medical care, the dental care, you know, the legal services, the job assistance? How can we do that? The GED, help them learn to drive, whatever we need to do, how do we do that in partnership, in you know, strong partnership in our community?
And to put more knowledgeable eyes on the street, Vanya, is that training at the Kearney Center, that is that open to everyone, or does that have to be sponsored through your, you know, employer or what?
It does. It doesn't. You don't have to have any kind of sponsorship. It is completely open and free to the public. We would like to continue to do this, so just inform the community as much as we can on this issue.
How do we find out more about that? You know, find out when the next one is, et cetera.
The STAX website.
Yes. Yeah, it's on our website, but we also have a calendar up there. So you can set your watch by every – or calendar by every third Friday from 1 to 3 at the Kearney Center. And all we ask is that people email stack@surviveandthriveadvocacy.org. Just email us and say, I would like to come. We'll reserve your spot. We'll get your certificate organized. And every month – we do a different focus. So this month, Vanya will be there to talk about labor trafficking. Last month, we had Bethany Gillot from DCF talk about children. Sonia Bush, Sergeant Bush from TPD, was there the first month. So we're having various emphases different times. So somebody can come 12 times a year and learn new stuff about human trafficking and link with others. So and we also want to, you know, emphasize, too, that WFSU is going to be broadcasting a documentary called Trafficked in America on January 14th at 10 o'clock. That's another piece of this, is understanding what went on with those children who were labor trafficked from Guatemala, you know, how they could be trafficked in a rural area like this. It was a small town in Iowa, but that could be Quincy. That could be Madison.
That was Tallahassee just
exactly.
A few years ago, we had two girls from Guatemala that came to not necessarily family members, and they were taken to the health department. The health department had just received training on what to look for, what human trafficking is in. The nurse immediately identified, why are these kids actually asking for shots so that they don't get pregnant, and immediately call TPD. So it can happen anywhere, like Robin said.
Yeah, but we all need to have that increased level of awareness, because just the folks who have received this training, that is not going to be adequate to deal with it.
That's true. And I just wanted to piggyback a little bit on what Vanya said about the disaster. Also, areas that have large events, football games, big, you know, conventions, whatever, that draws traffickers to the area too. So I think people should be, you know, certainly hotels and restaurants, they, you know, need to be even more hyper-vigilant, you know, when that's going on.
Well, folks, we could go on for the next hour. I wish we had that time available to us, but thank you so much for informing our listenership here on WFSU about what to be on the lookout for. Now, all of us can in some small way help to mitigate the situation. Susan Turner, co-owner of Food Glorious Food, Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center board member. Vanya Iovera, assistant director, FSU Center for the Advancement of Human Rights, also on the STAG board. Jeff Lipkman, senior VP, Florida Restaurant Lodging Association. And, of course, Robin Hassler-Thompson, executive director of Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center. Thank you all for coming on Perspectives today.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Perspectives produced by WFSU in Tallahassee. Technical assistance today by Evan Rossi and Lydell Rawls. I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, we'll delve into the idea of restorative justice, a very different kind of response to criminal activity that focuses on the rehabilitation of offenders through reconciliation with victims and the community at large. We'll talk about it next week right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.